Okay, so we looked at Exodus 20 through 24. Is there anything y'all want to talk about before we get going? We tried to talk about that. Okay, this is kind of fun. So this is not stuff that's in the manual, but I just nerdy stuff that I research because I'm a weirdo. Look at 20:25. Yeah, this is kind of fun. When you build an altar, Bailey, what kind of altar do you need to build? Look at that, verse 25. Read that for us when you get it.
Thou shalt wilt make me an altar of stone. Thou shalt not build a hewn stone. For if thou lift thy tool upon it, thou hast bruised
it. So you can't build an altar, according to this, out of stuff that's been tooled. That's been... Yeah, that you've chiseled. In other words, the stones have to be like as they come out of the ground. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that word tool, I actually wrote this in my scriptures. It is, I got to put this on lock. My son showed me how to do this. You go like this, and you go screen lock. Done. Look at that. Okay. The word is cherub, right on the board. The word for tool is the same word for sword. So here it is. The same word for sword. Now we pronounce it this. Tell me if this looks familiar. Cherub is how English speakers pronounce it. But the word, since there is not a dagesh here, it's pronounced cherub. Okay, but we say cherub. What does that look like to you? Yeah, in fact, if you do this in Hebrew, if you add the im to the end of it, so if I go like this, im. That's cherubim. That's, let cherubim and a flaming sword guard the way of the tree of life, lest Adam and Eve partake of the fruit thereof and live forever in their sins. You probably heard that bit in Genesis. Well, cherub is the word for sword. And so we don't know, but there's a lot of Jewish commentary on this, that the reason why God says don't tool the altar with a tool is because the word used is actually sword. In other words, that's associated with death, a cherev, and the altar is associated with life. Fascinating stuff. Will not change your life. It's just a fun geek out moment with the text and looking at the language and those kinds of things. By the way, that's why the cherubim and a flaming sword, it's a pun. Let cherubim and a flaming sword. It's like... Yeah, it's like saying, what's your PIN number? Well, PIN is personal identification number. So if you say, what's your PIN number? What you're saying is, what's your personal identification number? And so cherubim and a flaming sword, do you see what's going on? It's a pun. Anyway, that's fun, but like I said, it's not going to change your life. All right. And by the way, the big commentator on this is the famous medieval Jewish commentator, and his name is Rashi. If you ever hear Rashi says... Rashi is kind of like, he's like the McConkie of the Jewish world. He lived in 1040 and onward. And so he talks about this. Okay. Well, lots of stuff about, we talked about this before, right? In 21, if you make it wrong, you got to fix it. 21:24, eye for an eye. Verse 19, pay for the loss of his time. If I steal Bailey's ox, look at 22:1. What do I got to do for Bailey? It's kind of a good deal. In other words, you kind of want to get stolen from, right? Steal my ox, please. If you steal my Lexus, now I have 5. And by the way, if it's a sheep, so if you steal my Hyundai, not my Lexus, if you steal my Hyundai, according to verse 1, how many sheep do I get back? I get 4. So lesser animals get less. Okay. Some thoughts. Look at verse 3. Look at the end of verse 6. Look at the end of verse 5. Do you see the R word? You shall make full restitution. So that's kind of the theme behind these laws. So if I break it, fix it. By the way, this is just common sense, right? Okay. I love, go to Exodus 22. Look at verse 22. You might want to highlight that verse. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. Yahweh is the God of the widows and orphans. This is rooted in Old Testament theology, and it's this. We have to take care of the most vulnerable among us. We have to. And that is something that we can take out of the scriptures. Like, and by the way, I'm feeling it right now. I literally feel the Holy Ghost when I say this. We have to do that. It is just, it's part of our discipleship. If we don't take care of the weakest among us, then what are we? We're no different than Egypt. Okay? By the way, verse 16 of chapter 22 is all about the powers of life. If I entice a maid and she's not betrothed, well, now I take care of her. I pay, verse 17, the bride price. I think Exodus 22, verse 18 caused a lot of stress for people.
Which one?
Exodus 22, verse 18.
Yeah,
yeah, what did he change it to?
Murder.
Yeah.
So.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Wait, so, yeah, tell me, like, about the culture and, like, why they would put that in.
So.
Oh, because it's in 16.
I was just
right. Yeah, 1611, what's going on? Now, I don't know what the word is, but we can look it up. Want to look it up for fun?
Well, was it the other way around? Like, were they hunting witches before this, or did they read this and then they were like, oh, it says witch in here?
So here's the problem. Are you ready? Okay. Wow. Okay, so let's do this. I'm just going to put this here, and let's just do this for fun. Let's go to, if you have your blue letter Bible out, let's get it open. And if you don't, I'm going to pull it up on the screen so you can see it for yourself. Because really, this is the most important thing for you is to learn how to you do this yourself. Because you don't need an institute teacher. You just learn how to do it and you do it and have fun. You come here because I'm a nerd and this is all I do. And, you know, I'm saving you time. One of my favorite quotes by Hugh Nibley is he says, a good teacher, his job is to save his students time. And that's kind of what I think. Is like, I read Rashi so you don't have to. Okay, so if you go to verse 18... and you click on that, and you click tools. Look what it says. Super short verse. Okay. Ma kashefa lo. See that word lo right here? Anytime you see lo, that's a negation. In Greek, it's me. So that's you shall not. That's lo. And then it's taha yahe. And then we have this little samek here hanging out. So see this word? This is chaya. This is live. So this is this. And this is not live. So that's a negation. But what's the word? The word is kashaf. Now if you look really carefully, you see this. This is important. I'm just going to write it right here. Kashaf. I had no idea I was going to do this. So this is fun for me because I'm a language nerd. Okay, so you have ka. Sha, fascinating. Okay, that's what they're giving is which. Yeah, question.
Okay,
so did you type in Blue Letter Bible?
Yes, I have.
Okay, then you go to the search window and you type in Exodus 22. Okay. Did you do that?
I'm at Exodus 22.
Okay, I'm gonna show you how to get there. So
I'm at Exodus 22:18.
Tell me if you have that. Does it look like that?
No.
Let me see yours. I'm not going to touch it because of the COVID-19. Okay, so click 18. Actually, I just touched it. Okay. I know. I just lied. I'm not going to touch it, and then I touch it.
I'm not bothered. It's okay.
I know, but you don't want to get the COVID.
As long as you don't have COVID, we're okay.
I think I'm okay. Okay, interlinear.
Interlinear. Oh, okay.
Try that. There it is.
Oh, blah.
Okay, so interlinear. Okay. But now I just touched your phone, so now you're going to die. Okay, where are we at? Okay, I hit tools on mine. And then, see right here where it says H3784?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so here's the thing. You guys are going to learn Hebrew, so watch this. We're going to teach you some stuff. Do you see this right here? That's the he. If you see that at the end of a verb, it usually means she did it. Yeah, that's a feminine ending that tells you what's going on. So that's feminine, and usually when we say the mit in front of something, it means from or from this kind of thing. So if I come from Egypt, it's mi Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is Egypt. So mi Mitzrayim is from Egypt. So then the question is, okay, what's this kashaf? I don't know. I've not looked at this word. So click on that 3784, see what it says. Fascinating. A sorcerer. Okay, there you go.
Question.
Yeah.
So like Hebrew, you say master of feminine. Is it similar to Spanish that like you could say like mesa is feminine, but that doesn't mean that this is implying it's a feminine object. That's just how the language is. It doesn't mean that the object itself is associated with women, you know?
I think yes and no. So yes, it's kind of messy, but I'll give you an example. So the word for family is a feminine word. But typically the verbs, it's usually with the verbs. And I think Spanish is the same where, like, it's been a while since I've done Spanish. I have Greek on the mind. But if I say, let us go, how would you say let us go in Spanish? That's not a good one. Okay, so isn't it true, like, if we do it, it's something then if you do it or they do it?
You mean like it's conjugated differently?
Yes. So verbs are conjugated that way too, in the sense of, and they're not all the same, but... For example, if he does it and she does it, it's different. Like the endings are different.
It's the same in Spanish.
Yeah.
The person, like singular, is the same anyway.
Yeah, so they is ha ma, which is kind of weird because that's a feminine ending. Hema for masculine. But then.
Conjugate the verbs by gender. That's not necessarily.
I'm not answering your question, am I?
Well,
yeah.
Because it kind of makes sense, though, because if they conjugate the verb by gender, that means that the way the verb's conjugated implies whether a man or a woman is doing
it. The verbs, yeah. Okay, so some of the... Okay, the nouns are masculine and feminine. I'll give you an example. The cities are always feminine. And so I think there is some meaning to this, but it's not 100%. Okay. Well, there it is. Sorcerer. Man, I could talk about vowel points. We could do vowel points, but I think I'm just going to leave it there. Okay, so let's do this. Notice what it says. To practice sorcery. The bottom line is, people were doing this, and they were casting curses, and even prophets are doing this. So this is kind of a messy word. It's kind of messy. I'm going to do this. We're going to do this. Go to 2 Kings 23. We're going to show you this one. I'm going to pull it up here so you can see it.
Do I know witchcraft is a thing?
Well, yes and no. Like, I am not an expert on that. But I do know that, yeah, there's some of this stuff's going on. So, there's a question that was brought up. Yeah, I'm sorry. Courtney, we're doing this. So, here's the thing. Exodus 22, I think it's verse 18, says, thou shalt not suffer witch to live. So we're going down a dirt road. Because that's what we do. We go down dirt roads. So go to 2 Kings 23 and look at this. Yeah. This is an idea that the words don't mean what you think they mean all the time. And this is why the Bible's been edited and it's kind of messed up. Okay. Let's read about Hilkiah. Now, Hilkiah is kind of like Josiah's right-hand guy. This is the Jewish apostasy. So start for us and read verse 23 and just read for a little bit. Let's start there where the king stood by the pillar and I'll stop you. 2 Kings 23, 3. Okay, stop. See that word grove? That's not what that word is. So if you click the tools, and you've guessed it, the grove is, wait for it. Where's the grove? There it is. They took out the Asherah tree out of the Holy of Holies. Well, why was it in there? These are questions we have, okay? But we're not done. Next verse.
And he put down the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to burn incense in
the high places in the cities of Judah, and in the places round about Jerusalem, them also that burnt incense unto Baal, to the sun, and to the moon, and to the planets, and to all the hosts of heaven. And he brought out the grove from the house of the Lord without Jerusalem unto the brook Kidron, and burned it at the brook Kidron, and stamped its smell to powder, and cast the powder thereof upon the graves of the children of the people.
So Josiah is considered the greatest thing since sliced bread, because notice what he does. Chapter 23, verse 5, he put down the idolatrous priests. Let's pause and look at this. So who are the idolatrous priests? See that right there? Kamar. There's two words for priests in the Old Testament. One is Kohen, which is the most common, and the other one is Kamar. In scholarship, these are the Ha-Kamarim. Or, another way to say this in English, the Melchizedek ones. The Ha-Kemarim. Josiah, there's this big fight over who has authority. And remember, this is Lehi stands in this big distinction where we're changing their religion. And the Kemarim are cast out of the temple. They're called idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah put in. This is the pinnacle, the ending of first Israelite temple religion. We're casting them out.
Were these priests actually idolatrous?
That's what I'm trying to say. The Bible's been edited, and I'm saying they're not. I'm saying Lehi is one of these guys. Lehi and his ilk, the visionaries. And then notice what these visionaries are called. They're called not only idolatrous priests, they're called, where's the verse where they're called Sodomites? We just read it, I thought. Oh, verse 20. Okay, verse 7. Look at this. First time I was introduced to this, my mind blew. Look at that. There's the word for Sodomites. In the Hebrew Bible, the Ha-Kodeshim. Well, guess what that word is? I'm going to write this on the board so you can see it. This is why it matters. So I'm going to write it the way they have it there. They're pronouncing this Kadesh. Look at this. If I change Kadesh to this, did you notice what I did? I changed the patak to that. That's it. That's the only change. This is Kodesh. By the way, the Kodeshim, the English way to say Kodeshim is the saints. The Kodeshim are the holy ones. A Kodesh is someone that's holy or set apart for God, a visionary. My contention, and I can't prove it, but there's a lot of scholarship on this, a lot of ink's been spilled, is some scribe did this. They went from this, erased it, and went like that. And now you've turned all the Kemarim into Sodomites with one swipe of your thumb. Now, why is this important? Well, if you read Lehi, Lehi says he stands at the pinnacle where the Jews in Israel, in Jerusalem, want to kill the prophets. What do they want to do to Jeremiah? When we get to Jeremiah, they throw him in prison. Why? Because he's not with them. And that's why Nephi says, my brothers were like those guys in Jerusalem. The people that are called. And by the way, isn't this what religion does? If we don't like them, we say, well, you're this. And we're doing this all the time.
So is this the point, or I don't know if maybe it's a final point, but I've always been curious when, by Christ's time, the Melchizedek priesthood had been lost. Is this
is it. I mean, in my opinion, this is the Jewish apostasy. Now, what's going to happen is it's going to be destroyed, but they're going to rebuild it, and they're going to try to establish it, but they're just going to struggle because the question, remember the main question of the Bible, the meta-narrative is why do we get wrecked? So they're going to look back in their history, and they're going to say the reason we got wrecked is because we left the laws of God, and so they're going to hold so tightly to the law that they cast the visions aside. And when Jesus comes and he's like, I'm a visionary. And they're like holding on to the law so tight. And every time they come up to Jesus with law questions, Jesus is showing them mercy. And they freak out, right? And so in my opinion, the apostasy, whatever truth they have in the second temple, by the time Jesus comes is far gone. The last guy with a light on in the Old Testament is this guy named Malachi. And that's 400 BC. So I think we're on to something. And I think that's one of the messages of the Book of Mormon is we can lose the light. In other words, faith is not an inheritance. But it's a choice. Mm-hmm. And just because you keep your covenants doesn't mean your kids will. They have to choose it. So anyway, this to me is fascinating, how you change one little vowel point and you go from Kadesh to Kodesh. And if you see this right here, if you click this, I'll show you this. This is fun. If you click 6945, it shows you the word. But then look at this. If you go down here, let's see if I can find it. Right there. You can play around if you don't have, I have the dictionary in my office, but if you don't have one, you don't need one, because you can click these buttons and you can see the words next to it and you can see things that are so close. So for example, if you click this one, this is the next word in the dictionary.
Oh.
See that? Mm-mm. So that's Kadesh, and look at that. That word means holy too. See how it's the same three characters, just a little bit different pointing? And so you can just mess with it and kind of see different ways that it's used. And then you can also see how many times it's used in the Bible. Because they'll tell you, look at all the times that it, here it is. And you can see it. And you can, like I said, you can geek out till your heart's content. But anyway, we're back to witches. Sorry, we went on a dirt road. It was fun though.
Wait, so question. So whose perspective was writing again?
Okay, so in scholarship, because once again, I wasn't there, I can't prove it, but in scholarship, it's called the Deuteronomistic Historian. So here, I'm going to write this on the board. That's an M. Historian. And according to scholarship, the Deuteronomistic Historian wrote Deuteronomy, 1st and 2nd Kings. And by the way, if you've ever read Kings and then Chronicles, they're not written by the same person. They have totally different agendas. It's like if one wrote, Donald Trump was the best thing since sliced bread, and another author said, Donald Trump is the worst president ever. In a way, Kings and Chronicles kind of read like that. They have different political views, and they definitely have different opinions. But Deuteronomy, 1st and 2nd Kings, and much of the redaction of the Pentateuch. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Much of this is going to be highly edited by what's called the Deuteronomistic Historian. And we don't know who it is, but a lot of Friedman thinks it's this guy, Baruch, and he is Jeremiah's William Clayton. If you remember, William Clayton is Joseph Smith's scribe, and he's right next to him. Well, right next to Jeremiah is this guy named Baruch. And a lot of people think that after he dies, or his guild, his scribal school, put this together. Another option, there's a lot of scholars out there that think that maybe Ezra was the one who did. Ezra is this Second Temple Jew. Okay? Like, somebody played the role of Mormon. I don't think it was one guy. I think it was a scribal school. And I think they were somewhat inspired. This is my opinion. If they were fully inspired, I think that would read more like the Book of Mormon, and we'd have a, more of a balance. And the reason why I say that is because much of the Old Testament is balanced with J, E, D, and P. This is, a lot of it is heavily balanced. It's very light on E. The problem is, all of these texts have the dying Messiah, the dying Yahweh, taken out. I mean, where do you read anything in the Old Testament that reads like the Book of Mormon, how Jesus is going to come down and die and suffer for our sins? All that stuff's been taken out. My contention is it was in there because everyone else is talking about it. The Egyptians are talking about it. The Sumerians are talking about it. Even in Greek mythology, we have some of this stuff still remaining, and it's just jacked out of the Old Testament. So clearly there's editing that's going on.
Not to, like, go away from the subject.
No, there is no subject. We're going down lots of dirt roads.
Talking about, you know, the die ordering the people to take out the priests from the temple and all that stuff. And he specifically mentions that they burned incense to the sun, the moon, the planets, and all the things in heaven. What, because if your contention is that these are, you know, Melchizedek priesthood holders are actually, you know, worshiping the way the worship should go, what exactly is that referring to?
That's a good question. And I don't know, I wasn't there, but I have thoughts.
Okay.
But I could be dead wrong. So look at it this way. Verse 8. They defiled the high places where the priests burned incense. Now, where do we read about burning incense?
Well,
Let's just pause for a minute. In the temple. Where? Where do they burn the incense? Sorry, I'm going to erase this. Be thinking about that. Go to Isaiah 6. Okay. Now, you asked the question, Bailey. This is total speculation. I don't know. But this question is very provocative, so we've got to do Isaiah 6. Before we do it, what I'm drawing up here is a picture of the temple. This right here is called the altar. Anybody want to guess what it's called the altar of? It's called the altar of incense. This is called the bread of the presence. This is the light. This is the ark. The laver, the altar. There's two of these. There's the veil. There's the veil. Isaiah 6, will you read verse 1 through 2, 3? 1, 2, and 3.
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings, with twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another, and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory.
Good.
Isn't this?
The most important verse. Verse 4. Read verse 4.
And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke.
Where's Isaiah standing?
Right there.
He's right here. He's right in front of either the veil, or he's next to the altar of incense. Now, if you've read Luke chapter 1, do you remember Zacharias when he sees Gabriel? What's Zacharias doing? He's bringing the incense to the temple. And it very specifically says that Gabriel's right here. He's standing right to the right of the altar. Now, I don't remember where it is. It's in the book of Revelation. And I can find it if you want me to find it. But there's this beautiful passage where John in the book of Revelation says that the altar of incense is the prayers of the saints.
That's nice.
Okay? In early Christian writing, if you want this stuff, there's tons of literature on this. My favorite article is by Hugh Nibley called The Early Christian Prayer Circle in Antiquity. In early Christian writing, it writes like this, that there were the saints would stand like this in a circle around the altar and they would offer prayer. So there's all this literature in early Christianity how that stuff's going on. Now, why did they do this? John says because they wanted to do this. Behold the vision of God. Behold God's face. Now, if you're an outsider and you don't believe in visions and you're throwing the Kemarim out, well, are they burning incense? Yes, what's right there? So when you ask that question, Bailey, I don't know, but I see these connections. And I just say, this is very interesting. And it's very provocative. And if you really want to see something, Latter-day Saints today are doing some kinds of things that are similar to this. And if you want to see mockery, look at people who don't believe in these things and look what they say. I mean, the same mockery is happening today. So I don't know, but I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility. It's a great question. So Talmadge, we are on dirt roads. We started in Exodus 22, thou shalt not suffer a witch to burn or to live. We're not going to suffer to live, and we've gone down like 50 dirt roads, and it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, great.
So that's where we are. Yeah, this is, like, I have no idea where we're going, but I'm having fun. I'm recording. I don't know, anybody who listens to this recording is going to be like, is Mike Day on drugs? And the answer is, well, I definitely am on Coke Zero.
I have a question really fast.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, do you have a minute after class? So come into my office, and then the bottom line is bring a thumb drive, and I will give you stuff, like stacks. I have 7 gigs of books just on this stuff. Yeah, so. Yeah, here's where you would start. You ready? Have you read like Mormonism and Early Christianity by Hugh Nibley?
No.
So you're going to want to read that. I could sit and spill a lot of ink, but you're going to want to read that one. Another one you're going to want to read is this one. This is by a Methodist scholar. What's fascinating to me is the scholarship on this, the best stuff isn't even written by members of our church, which is fascinating. So I love this lady, and she responds to my email. She's kinder than the day is long. She's this Methodist scholar in England. Her name is Margaret Barker, and if you just Google her name, just read her stuff. Now, the first couple books you read are going to kind of blow your mind, and you're going to be like, it's over my head, but that's okay. Like, I still feel that way. Sometimes I'll read some, and I'm like, okay, what is she saying? But she wrote a really great book called The Older Testament. And if you don't want to read the book, I'm going to remember Hugh Nibley's motto. He says, a good teacher saves his students time. I'm going to save you time if you don't want to read 350 pages. And here's what she says. She says that there were Melchizedek priests that were visionaries that saw God, that knew that God would come down and die, take a body, die, and be resurrected, and they get edited out of the Bible. Like I said, she's not a member of the church. By the way, Mormons love her. We have her come and speak at our conferences because we're like, can we get more Margaret Barker? It's like, give me candy. So she teaches this, but she doesn't just say it. She's just not making crap up. She is pulling stuff out of the documents. There's all these documents that are ancient where they're talking about this, and she's like, yes, this is a thing. And so Mormons pull her aside and say, so could Lehi have been a dude? And she's like, yes. Lehi is standing in what she says, the visionaries of the first temple.
So why is she still Methodist?
That's a great question. You should email that and ask her. Tell me, why do you think do you believe in the Book of Mormon? But she's geeking out on this, and her contention is this, and this is what's mind-blowing. She wrote another book called The Mother of the Lord. And if you don't want to read the book, I highly suggest you do. But if you don't want to read it, I wrote like a 4 or 5 page review of it on my website, and I'll send you that link where I show with pictures and I kind of summarize her book. But essentially, in this book, she says that John, who's a revelator, John the Revelator, who wrote the book of Revelation, stands in that genre of literature, that genre of prophecy, saying, yes, we're putting the tree back in the Holy of Holies. The tree represents the mother. She's a big fan of this idea that God has a wife and that she's edited out of the Bible, and that God and his wife have a son who came down and died and was redeemed. You can just see why Mormons are like just geeking out, right? And she's proving it. She's just like, here's the scholarship, and here's the texts that are coming out of the ground, and she goes to Egypt, and she's doing Coptic, and she's doing 7th century texts, and she's doing all this stuff, and you're just, by the time you're done, you just feel like you've been on a roller coaster. So I've got the book, and it's all marked up, and I've read it twice, and I'm like, I still learn all this stuff out of it. And so she's the one that really introduces this idea of the Kemarim being cast out. And she's like, who are, and by the way, the Kemarim, that's what the word is for priests. There's Cohen and Kumar. Well, if I add a feminine ending to it, I get the place where they defended the Ark of the Covenant at the end of the Book of Mormon in Mormon 6. In Mormon 6, they take, in the mountain of God, they take the Ark, the stone box, and they put the accoutrements of kingship in there, and they die fighting for it. At Kamara. It's fascinating. Anyway. Yeah, you will love her. She's fun.
Every time we're in this class, my brain's a little sponge that got over soaked. Like, all the water's just slowly dripping out, so it comes in. I don't know.
Yeah. It's awesome. My favorite way to teach is just like, I don't even know what's going to happen. It's just like, giddy up, let's go. Okay, so we are, and we haven't even done like the high priest garments and stuff. Like, I have so much stuff to show you guys. Can I show you one video? Okay, so this is way cool. So we're doing this video. It's so good. So the high priest garments, let's do it. Pull this up here. Okay. Let's do Jesus as the great high priest. Hopefully this will work. Maybe it won't. Oh, there it is. Okay. Exodus 28.